Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And this week is a stand-up to cancer special. For that reason, we're going to be parking the booze this week and enjoying a dry, sober conversation. Before we get started, just a little heads up. This episode contains talk of drug use and rather strong language. I am truly excited to be joined by a man who's something of a legend in the music world. In the late 80s, alongside his brother, his best mate Bez, and fellow bandmates, he helped create the scene and sound of Madchester with Happy Mondays, brimming with swagger and seemingly every drug they could get their hands on. Their sound and attitude collided perfectly with the rise of acid house and rave culture. But famously, what goes up must come down. And after years of excessive record sales and even more excessive living, the Happy Mondays dissolved into debt, drug addiction, and a 12-year battle with lawyers. As the Mondays collapsed, my guest re-emerged as the frontman of Black Grape to huge critical success, and having started using heroin as a teenager, finally got himself clean in his mid-40s. Ironically, having tried extreme rehab, stomach implants, and cold turkey, it was eventually cycling and exercise that got him clean, furiously working out day and well into the night until his dependency subsided. Since then, we've voted for him in the jungle, we've watched him and Bez watch the telly on Gogglebox, and he's been back on our screens recently in Stand Up and Deliver for Channel 4, supporting Stand Up to Cancer. The show saw him coached and mentored by Jason Manford to pull off a 10-minute live set as a stand-up comedian. He does it, but he struggles, having recently, in later life, been diagnosed with both ADHD and dyslexia. Now 59, he's a father of six, is very happily married to Joanne, who manages his television work, and they live together in Manchester. So let's give him a call. I can't wait. It's Sean Ryder. Sean, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yes! Sean, how technically minded are you? Because this is a blooming nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm not technically minded at all. You know, I can switch on the television. That's how technically minded I am. Yeah. Yeah, I'm the kid that used to go in the shops and touch something on the display and it all fell down, you know.
How does it work on Gogglebox then? You don't have to set it all up?
No.
Just sit there?
No, no, they just come in here. You know, they set the gear up, leave it there for about a month or whatever it is, how long it takes to film, and, yeah, we don't have to touch it, you know. I mean, I'm sure Bez is much different than me, you know, and if he touched it, I think it'd end up just like if I'd touched it.
Pieces on the floor.
Yeah.
Listen, Channel 4 have been keeping you very busy of late, not only with Gogglebox, but you've just done Stand Up and Deliver. When that phone call came through, what was your first honest reaction? Tell me exactly what you said.
Yeah, I'll do this one because it looks like something I could probably do, you know what I mean?
Look,
I said it a load of times, I'm ADHD with a load of other conditions thrown in, you know, learning difficulties and disabilities. So, you know, and I forget, you know, I mean, learning, from being a kid, learning's all about remembering and, you know, I don't remember. I haven't done since I was a four-year-old, you know, I was 28 before I learned the alphabet.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was part of my condition and, yeah. So
that's not Sean. How old are you when you were? So you were talking about the fact you've been diagnosed as having ADHD, attention deficit
disorder.
Yeah, and you were. How old were you when you were diagnosed with that?
Last year, 2020. The thing is, I've got six kids, and four of them have got it, and it's only in their adult life, two of them that you know they discovered they had it, and then my daughter who's 12, when we was sort of, things was, you know, sort of going a bit ski with, and we had to start looking into it and everything else, and that's when I found out, well, it's got to come from somewhere, and it's all come from me. So, you know, and it explains a lot, really, how, you know, my life's been chaotic, so it explained a lot to me, and I didn't want, you know, my youngest daughter going through what I've had to go through. So, you know, we're on it big time now. But you know what? Believe it or not, there's still a big ignorance about it. Really is. You know, I mean, in the 1960s and 70s, you couldn't understand it. But, you know, now, I mean, I sent, you know, my girls to private school because I thought, you know, to get more out with the ADHD. And it didn't work out like that, you know. There's actually more help in the normal schools.
In the state system, yeah, because private schools aren't obliged to provide SENCO teachers and SENCO support, are they? And yeah. It makes learning so difficult.
Learning's impossible. I was told that, you know, it was a miracle that I ever learned to read and write. You know, I got educated in the 60s, and at the same time I went to Catholic school, and I was ambidextrous, so I was left-handed. And every time I picked up a pencil or a crayon or whatever with the left hand, I was whacked and made to do it with me right. So I wrote round in circles. And also, with the ADHD, your temper and your emotions, then, you know, I sort of got psychopathic behaviour syndrome or whatever that is. And, yeah, so he was branded an absolute lunatic and, you know, and bad behaviour and all that lot. So I never got on with school.
Yeah, you think back, Sean, you know, if it wasn't, you know, that was your experience. But even sitting in a classroom full of 30 other kids, there was always somebody in the class that got tagged that. And you look back now and you think, were they dyslexic? Were they ADHD? You know, you just don't, we didn't have any kind of sympathy or empathy or understanding of a learning challenge like that, a learning difficulty.
Yeah, I mean, when I think back now, we had four sets at our school, and I was in set four, which was basically crowd control. You was put in set four because, you know, you was a naughty kid and, you know, you didn't do any work and it really was crowd control. And every kid in that class, now I think back, and I know how a lot of them have turned out and a lot of them are dead, every kid in that class had some sort of, you know, whether it was autistic or ADD, ADHD, you know, APD, you know, these. All of them. All of them had some sort of mad condition, but we were just all naughty kids, uncontrollable.
When you got that diagnosis a year ago, was it like a eureka moment for you where you were suddenly went, Oh, everything makes sense now.
Yeah, I mean, because of the process we'd gone through with one of the girls, I was aware a couple of years before that, but it was only last year when I was diagnosed. But yeah, it was an absolute eureka moment because it explained everything. You know, it explained, you know, why I lived the chaotic life. You know, why I couldn't learn. You know, your brain's not wired up the same. The messages don't shoot across. I had trouble, you know, understanding what people were saying, you know, because there's other sorts of conditions with it, you know, and I seem to have got the jackpot and got the lot, you know, controlling your temper and your emotions and everything else.
It's a lot.
No, it's like, yeah, so, you know, it's, it was great, actually.
I bet it was. And what's changed now that you know what it is? How do you live differently to help manage it or navigate life?
Just a lot of meditation and all sorts of stuff.
That's good.
Yeah.
So when you went in and did Stand Up and Deliver, did you know Jason before, Jason Manford?
I met Jason before, yeah. You know, I met him on, oh, what's it called? This, all this memory stuff as well, you see. People say, oh, it's the drugs. Well, my memory's always been, you know, mad from, like I say, from being a little kid. You know, so it has absolutely nothing to do with drugs, you know. It's just, you just don't remember stuff. Because of the, you know, it's not wired up right. So Manford had met him on football, something on a Saturday morning. I'd met him on that.
Yeah, soccer AM.
Yeah, but yeah, he didn't have to work with me proper then.
So what was it? I mean, obviously, you went in and you were very upfront with him. You said, "Look, I've got ADHD. This isn't going to be easy." And you got really annoyed with yourself and really frustrated.
Yeah.
Was it a scary process, Sean?
No, not really. I mean, look, it's because I've had this all my life and I didn't even know about it, so everything's a challenge. You know, everything's a challenge holding your emotions in, everything's a challenge with your behaviour, everything's a, you know, I go on shows and they're telling, you know, these are the rules of the show, and I'm thinking about dancing flower pot men from Mars, you know what I mean? I can't concentrate on anything, it really, really hurts, so, you know. It's just part of life. You get on with it, you know what I mean? And you just do, you know, you do what you can do. But, as you know, my point of view was it's an audience. I'm used to going on in front of audiences. You know, all right, I'm not going on there telling jokes, but, you know, I walk out in front of thousands of people and do a show, so.
Was it far worse than you thought and scarier than standing up on stage and doing what you've been doing for however many decades now?
Like you say, I'm not even capable of going, oh, I'm scared of that. Because you don't think like that. You just do it. You know what I mean? So it wasn't really like that, but it's like, I'm all, yeah, piece of piss, can do that. And then when I got up there, and it was just like, my problem was, it's like, look, you give me a set of questions that we're going to talk about on here. I looked them upstairs 10 minutes ago. I can't remember what they was, right? So I'm doing something, right? And then I've got, without an auto cue, right, which you usually get in TV and all that lot, and on, you know, stage and everything, I'm doing it without an auto cue, and I've got a disability.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to think real quick, then it goes even worse. So everything just went out of my head. I mean, I could have been stood on stage just making stuff up and, you know, going blah, 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 blah. But, it just all goes.
This kind of brings me to my first question, because despite the fact that you now know and understand that you've got a disability, all your life you've never been afraid to jump into something that's completely new to you, like completely out of your comfort zone. So I wondered if you could go back and recall some of those moments that you've really loved or hated where you've had to do something that was completely alien to you.
Going outside the front door can be pretty alien to me, you know. Can you imagine this? If I went on Channel 4 now, instead of 20-odd years ago, and I swore like that, and they actually banned a kid with learning difficulties and learning disabilities, right, and took him off the TV channel and put him in a book, that wouldn't happen now. You know what I mean? Because it'd be all talked about and planned or whatever. You know, I didn't go on Channel 4 and start wanting to swear and all that lot. You know, I was going on doing a song or talking to Chris, and, you know, that's what happens. You know, I've got ADHD.
Let me explain, because, you know, people didn't know, you didn't know, others didn't know then that you've got ADHD. Channel 4 famously named you in their compliance manual, and they banned you from live telly, didn't they? They banned you from live telly because you swore.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't do that now, would they?
You're quite right. Now, if you went back, a young man with a learning disability, but there's no way that, A, they would have put you in that position in the first place, and they certainly wouldn't have banned you and made, you know, made an example of you.
Yeah, you know, but that's, you know, it's just how it was, isn't it? You know, there's a lot, even though I was saying before, there's still not a much awareness. I mean, don't forget ADHD as well. It's not one fits all. You know,
no.
I could be sat next to another person with ADHD and, you know, our sort of symptoms are rarely. You know, I've got a kibosh, you know, I've got fucking loads of them.
And, you know, you go back to that question about doing things that are out of your comfort zone. For example, let's look at, like, going into the jungle. You'd never been in a jungle before. You'd never hung out with people like Gillian McKeith.
I mean, I had been in a jungle before. I mean, that's a rainforest, isn't it, really? And I'd been in real jungles. But that's not the point. My biggest thing was about meeting new people and meeting a load of lovies. You know, that was my thing, you know, that sort of was freaking me out a bit, not anything else. And I was lucky, really, because it was all right, you know what I mean? It was all okay. Even Gillian, you know, I had a novel with her. You know.
You did?
Yeah. She's all right, you know.
Were you there when she fainted?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's a blagger, isn't she? That's what I liked about, you know, I mean, you know, she's what, a poo doctor, you know, whatever, you know, no qualifications in poo doctoring or whatever. She just sort of, like, blagged it, you know. So I admire that. I like that about her. She's a blagger.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a bit like, you know, you watching telly on Gogglebox is the ultimate blag, isn't it?
It's a great job.
Is that brilliant? I mean, Sean, if you'd like think back to when you first started.
Oh, I wanted to be Ballynorman, me. Well, you know, that was the only job I ever wanted, Ballynorman.
That's it.
Give me his job, I'll have that.
Let's go back to the beginning of your working life.
I started working at 13 on the building sites and ripping cinema seats out of bingo halls all over the country, you know, through the night.
Teacher? 13?
Yeah.
Who got you that job?
Me.
13, you were working through the night. Was your mum not going like, Sean, where are you?
Well, she knew where I was, ripping up cinema seats. She knew we were out robbing and getting high and all that lot. So, yeah, you know, I wasn't expecting to, you know, be academic or anything. So I was working. So she was happy with that. And the building, like labouring and all that lot at the same time. If I weren't on the building site, I was off doing the ripping out cinema seats. And then at 15, when I'd left school, I went into the messenger boy, you know, and I mean, I didn't even really pass the exam for that. I mean, you know, my granddad knew the postmaster and my dad was a postman. So, you know, it was basically as long as you could just follow the orders and go and take that there, you know, or go and put them in that big box there and put them over there, you know, you got the job. So I got the job.
And part of the job that you had to do was delivering telegrams, and that was informing people that either they were going to be evicted,
yeah,
or that somebody had died. I mean, it's you were hardly, you know, the bearer of good news most of the time, were you?
Yeah, no, yeah, I used to get that a lot. I had one on me, lad. You think it was a fiver, it was a packet of Johnny's or something. You know, someone put it. Oh, lad, I had one on me, yeah. But, it was great. I loved it. You know, we got to, you know, we was hanging around the centre of Manchester with a bunch of lads, you know, just waiting to take these telegrams, you know, that came in every couple of hours. And, you know, we just, you know, we used to go to, like, the pub and watch Bernard Manning in an afternoon or the strippers. So it was great, you know, and you got paid all right. I mean, although I was earning more at 13 than I was in a real job. But, I ate more off the cinema seats and all that lot than doing proper, you know, that. And then when you was 18... you had to go and be a man then, not a post messenger boy, post boy. You had to go and be a man. And that was shit. So I dropped a load of acid and got sacked.
Which job was that from, Sean?
The post office. Like I say, you're a post boy, you're a messenger boy till you're 18, right? 19 as well, sometimes, if you're still driving the vans or the mopeds. And then at 18, 19, you have to go and be a proper postman.
Ah.
And a proper postman is about, you get about £5 more a month for working a million times harder, and it's no fun. So, you know, I was sacked.
Why were you sacked from that one?
I was off my tits. It was boring. I mean, I just used to go in, tripping me nut off and, you know, taking big boxes of jeans home that should have gone to the Arndale to my gap.
So what came after that then, Sean, once you'd been sacked for acid trips?
Well, the band. I was 18 when I set up the band.
Right, so straight into that. So in terms of, like, your experience of having proper jobs, it's that, really, isn't it? It's ripping out the cinema seats. Didn't you used to deliver manure to people as well?
Oh, that was when I was a little kid. When it was the rag and bone man, you know, used to get the arse shit off the street and then bag it up and go and take it to the old ladies and sell it to the old ladies or, you know, the gardeners or whatever. That was when I was about 8.
That's very entrepreneurial, Sean. You could have been the next Richard Branson with that kind of thinking.
Yeah.
Literally, shoveling shit.
Yeah, well, picking it up, yeah. Give him out a shovel. Pick it up and put it in the bag.
When you think back to then and the working life that you've had since, I mean, do you consider yourself to have been incredibly lucky?
Lucky? Oh, yeah. Absolutely lucky. Yeah, yeah. Really.
I mean, obviously, you needed a lot of talent and a lot of great tunes to get you there, but fundamentally, to be all these years on...
Well, as much as that, though, it's also being in the right place at the right time. I mean, it's that old one, isn't it? Old cliche, it's not what you know, it's who you know. You know, I mean, so we met the right people. You know, we met a guy that used to have market stalls who was best friends, you know, with a load of guys that was worked at the Hacienda and knew Mike Pickering and Tony Wilson's pals, you know, and we hooked up with this guy and he introduced us to those people and, you know, it went from there.
Can you talk me through some of the most important relationships that you've had, the people that have changed your world?
I'll change the world. Well, I've just named Tony there. Yeah, Tony Wilson.
I mean, set the scene with Tony there, Sean, because for anybody that doesn't know, he ran Factory Records with Mike, wasn't it? Mike Pickering.
Well, I mean, Factory, yeah. I mean, you know, Factory was really Tony and... it was Tony and Rob Gretton, really.
Right.
And then Mike Pickering, you know, was part of that team. Rob was New Order's manager. So, you know, it was like, say, you know, those was really important people that we got introduced to through Phil Sachs.
Right.
But, I mean, I suppose the most important person for me, really, is my missus, Joanne. I mean, I met her, you know, she was 17, when she was 17 in the Hacienda, and her best mate went on to marry my best mate. But she blew me out because the band was sort of just about to sort of take off. And she just went, "You're just going to be such a twat." And, you know what I mean? I'm not putting up with any shit. So she blew me out. But we'd always stayed in the same group because, you know, her best pal and her mine. And, you know, he was, you know, we all worked in the music business. So, yeah.
How many years passed between her blowing you out because she thought you were going to turn into a twat and you two actually getting it together?
Oh, God. Well, 17 to 35, whatever.
Blimey, long time.
Yeah, but we don't, like I say, we was in the same circle, do you know what I mean? But, yeah, because, I mean, you know, I mean, I really didn't grow up till I hit 40, you know what I mean? I was still doing the same thing and behaving the same way at 40 as I was at 17, you know what I mean? It's just many kids, aren't they, you know? So, you know... It was like 40 was sort of grow-up time, you know, so, yeah.
So by the time you two got it together, obviously you were coming out of being the eternal teenager. Who made the first move?
Yeah, because I would have been totally unaware.
Really?
You know, about anything.
Really?
So I don't know, really. I mean, Joe, you know, Joe knows what she's doing, you know. I mean, I don't, so I didn't even ask her out. I didn't even ask her to get married or whatever. We got married and we ended up with each other. But, yeah.
How did you end up getting married if you didn't ask her?
It just happened, right. I'll tell you what happened there, right. We set up the christening for the youngest. And then we decided at the last minute, we didn't tell anybody, but we invited everyone to the christening and then we got it set up so we'd get married while we was there at the christening and then just told everyone, and I, you know, that we was getting married and, oh yeah, bollocks. My mum's running around saying, he's not, he's joking. Like, no, no. So, so we got married at the christening.
Whose idea was it to do that and surprise everyone? Yours, Joanne's?
Not sure. Ours.
Yeah, that's the right answer.
She's got a great way of making it look like I do everything, you know, I invent everything, I come up with.
Do you know what though, Sean, if you had stayed together in that first time you got together when you were a much younger man, I mean, she's probably right, it wouldn't have worked, would it? You were too much.
No, I'd be dead, she'd kill me.
Yeah.
She really would, you know, I wouldn't have woke up after a night's sleep. She really would have, you know, cut my throat when I was asleep.
I'm sure she wouldn't.
But, she would.
So what made her think that actually now you're all right, now it's safe to proceed?
Well, also, Jo was a special needs teacher as well, right? So she got a star pupil. You know, she totally understood and understands my behaviour and how I am. You know, I mean, I can still, you know, I mean, what I think's funny, a lot of people just think's outrageous because I just don't think and I do mad shit that I think's funny. You know, and I have to, you know, I still have to really, you know, it's, I have to really keep focused and control. And she does a good job at that.
So she gets you, basically. That's the fundamental, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah. She got me before I got me, easily.
And what, you know, if I was to sit down and ask her now, what made you want to get married to Sean then? What do you think she'd say?
I don't know. No idea.
Have you ever romanced her? Are you a romantic when it's just the two of you?
I try to be, you know. I try to be. I don't know if I succeed, but I do try to be.
What would you consider a romantic gesture?
A romantic, yeah, well, I mean, only because I've been taught about romantic gestures, you know, like cooking meals for someone or setting up a date and all that sort of thing, you know. I mean, I didn't have a clue. I really didn't. You know, to be told, shown.
It's interesting that you've got Joanne, who really gets you and understands you, and then you've got Bez, who's also been by your side forever and a day, and he gets you, doesn't he? He's somebody that's never
listen,
gone.
The main thing about that, right, is he's got conditions and he won't have it. He thinks he's normal, right? And I'm not, you know, he's... It's like, so, you know, he's just not, no, I'm down with it. I mean, he's just as potty as I am. That's why we get on.
But for everything that's changed in your life since you started working, Sean, the one thing that's never changed is Bez, really, isn't it? He's always been there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, since, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, me and him are, you know, the team on a lot of things, you know. I mean, especially, you know, sort of the same ideas on the Mondays and what we wanted to do.
Who else has had a massive impact on your life, do you think?
Well, it was the bands and musicians, you know. And I mean, I was lucky enough to sort of grow up, you know, with listening to, you know, fantastic music on Radio 1 in the morning when you was going to school in 1969 or whatever, you know, and all you know, the... You know, all the fantastic, the Kinks and the U and the Beatles and, you know, you name it. So, you know, all those sort of, you know, music, really. I mean, the main thing about that was, I'd never even thought of, you know, I loved music. It was always in our house, our family, you know, and all different types of music. I loved it, but I never even thought about picking up a musical instrument. I've been in a band till I went to watch Stardust and That'll Be the Day with David Essex. And I thought, yeah.
Really?
I think I'll do that. That looks good, you know, the birds, the booze and the pot and the pills and all that sort of thing, as it was said in the film. Thought, yeah, I'll have a bit of that. Yeah, that looks an interesting life.
David Essex?
Yeah. Great movie. Still, yeah. I think it's still two of the best films ever made about the music business.
That's one influence I wouldn't have expected to hear from you, Sean. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing about, you know, I mean, growing up, music was very clanny, wasn't it? He was a punk, he was a soul boy, he was this, that. Everybody that's in our band, you know, he was all open to say, you know, well, you know, we like Mud, you know, or, you know, as well as Bowie or, you know, whatever, or Chaz and Dave, you know what I mean? It was, you know, you like music's music. So, you know, them sort of clanny kids, oh, we're this, we're that. You know, it's not, we was just like, no, we like all music.
Well, then you're missing out, right? Because you're closing your ears off to a ton of great stuff.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's one of the things I've always loved about festivals, is you go to a festival and it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know, you can wander around and you can have, you know, a bit of world music over here, a bit of soul over there, and then and anything else that hangs in between.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I did go to festivals, you know, I was always up in nut anyway, so I didn't know what was going on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Obviously, there's been a lot of recreational drugs over the years, but also, you can't remember stuff because of your disability. When you look back and people talk about massive moments and you can't remember them, what are the ones that you think, oh, I just wish I could remember that?
If someone prompts me on something, I can sort of, you know, remember bits, but I forgot what I was going to say then. I had a good answer to that and I can't remember what I was going to say.
Don't worry.
It does me head in that when people think, oh, it's drugs, and I've always had this memory, you know, that's just shockingly bad. I mean, the thing is as well about drugs was drugs made me feel normal, right?
Right.
I was a fidgeter. I couldn't fidget all the time. I'm always used to be messing with me underpants, things and fidgeting and couldn't keep still. So I was one of them as well, stop fiddling. Still get now out of school, and kids need, especially kids with ADHD, you've got to have something in your hand, messing with it, just to help you take in what you're supposed to be remembering.
Yeah.
You know, it really does. So, I always felt uncomfortable. And then as soon as I took certain drugs, I didn't feel uncomfortable. I could sit still without moving about. I felt cool in my underpants, you know what I mean? It's riddling about and all that lot. So they made me feel like I fit in. I was normal.
That's extraordinary, because most people take drugs to get out of it, not
well,
to become...
You know, it's like Ritalin, isn't it? It's amphetamine, yet it makes kids focus. It makes you focus.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So really, you weren't chasing highs. You were just trying to... feel like you fitted in?
No, it made me feel, you know, I mean, heroin to me made me feel normal.
Did it?
You know, absolutely normal, where I didn't feel odd and ridiculous, you know, or you know, embarrassed because, you know, it's like, you know, the only thing that, you know, when I went on and did the sweaty thing with Chris, I mean, at the time, because you're on heroin, you don't feel anything, so there's no emotions there to it, so which is great, because if it wasn't, I'd have probably after that, because I'd sworn and forgotten, did this, that, and I felt so shit, and I felt really bad, you know, because I, you know, I fucked up, I was embarrassed. So taking a drug that cuts out all emotions, to me, was just great. Especially when you don't know how to deal with emotions,
yeah.
It comes out in anger. You know, you go and beat somebody senseless because you just, you know, it makes you feel a dick.
I never, ever thought of it in that way, Sean, because I remember you've said that it wasn't until you finally really kicked heroin that you started to feel things again. And sometimes it wasn't nice to feel that stuff because it's what you do with all those emotions.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I took them in the first place, put them all to bed. You know, even though you didn't know you had some sort, you know, you had this thing going on, but you know, it certainly stopped me fidgeting and it started me feeling uncomfortable and stopped me feeling, you know, odd and ridiculous and like a sore thumb stuck out somewhere, but I don't know why, you know, so yeah.
And it's interesting, isn't it, that all of that behavior has been sort of rolled up into rock and roll legend.
Yeah.
That everyone thinks you're the wild man, the party boy, the nutter. And actually, it was all about trying to live with a disability.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure a lot of artists and musicians and things have got, you know, from, you know, going back centuries, you know, have got conditions. I mean, you're not going to cut your fucking ears off, are you, really, if you haven't got a condition?
That's very true. Have you spent a lot of time sat there kind of linking it all together then, Sean, going, this all makes sense now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That must have been quite strange.
Enlightening.
Yeah.
You know.
But also when you've got kids that have got ADHD, you really get them. And I think for a lot of people that are parenting children with a disability like that, they don't understand it. You really do understand it. That must be helpful in your family dynamic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it really is. I mean, no, I've been really lucky. I'm still alive and breathing. And, you know, I'm, you know, I've had a, you know, a pretty decent life, you know, so, but, I fucking hate any of my kids to go through what I had to, you know, all the nuttiness that goes with it.
Yeah. Do you feel more calm with it now? Now that you know what it is and you're able to, are you able to manage it? How does it work?
I'm a lot better. You know, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm looking at. I know when things can sort of get a bit, ooh. You know, I mean, I can still have outbursts. That's it.
And now that you understand yourself better, how's life changed, Sean? What's the upside to?
Well, growing old helps. Getting older helps, doesn't it?
You reckon?
You know? Oh, God, yeah. You know, that's why they let a lot of prisoners out of jail once they start eating 50, because they're not as dangerous. So, you know, it just gets easier.
And yeah, you're right, it does get easy. But also, I mean, you've had a lot of lifestyle changes as well. I mean, at one point, you were an exercise fanatic, weren't you?
Yeah, it was until my hips went. You know, I mean, I did a lot of bike riding. I mean, that's how I stopped the heroin, really. You know, I've been in loads of rehabs and stuff over the years, but I was always going in them for somebody else, or for some reason, you know, that wasn't, you know, me wanting to get off it. Like, say, when I hit 40, I didn't even bother with rehab. I got on my bike, went through cold turkey because I wanted to do it, you know.
That is amazing. So what, you suddenly had that moment, which I think you're right, any addict, any dependency you've got to want to give it up or it's never going to work.
Yeah.
And you, having been through implants and rehabs and every treatment pretty much out there, you thought, I'm just going to get on the bike.
Yeah.
And cycle it out.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah. I mean, again, it was like my kids were, you know, now in those ones 30 and that. It was, you know, when they, you know, they was getting a bit older and it wasn't, you know, infants, and they were starting to get older and becoming aware of what, you know, their dad was or did. It was like, you know, I didn't want to start embarrassing them, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some might say, for both of us, Sean, it's a bit late for that. They've got access to Google. We're screwed.
Oh, I know, yeah.
How old are your kids now? You say the eldest is 30.
Eldest is 30, youngest is 12.
Wow, that's quite a range, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, have you got any grandchildren yet?
No, not me. Bez has. Bez is a granddad.
Is he?
Our kid's a granddad. We've got a few granddads in the band, but no, I'm not, you know, because, yeah, my girls are quite intellectual. They're not going to have children yet. Till they've got their diplomas.
What's it like when you're at a Monday's gig and people turn up with their grandchildren? That must be a bit.
Yeah, that's odd, great. Weird. I mean, our fan base really, you know, goes from, you know, 9 years old to 90 years old.
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
And it spans so many different classes as well.
We've got the Sun readers and the Guardian readers.
You really have. I mean, yeah. Not many bands can do that. And you did it without even trying, which is even better, because you just didn't care at the time, did you? As long as someone was listening.
Well, yeah. I mean, people think that we didn't work out as a band. I mean, we really did. I mean, none of us could play. You know, none of us. I mean, I'd never written anything in my life, really, you know. So I had got the job as a songwriter. I wanted to be a drummer, but timing was shit. So, you know, I got the job as a songwriter. Our kid ended up getting the job as a bass player. The one person who could read music in our band, he was one that, you know, had the job as a teacher and everything else with us.
You went in not knowing what you were doing, really, did you? None of you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we got to make records way before we should have. You know, we literally had just started being able to play instruments. You know, I wasn't even really songwriting, you know. I mean, that stuff off the top of your head sort of tackle. You know, I didn't know about chorus, verse, middle eights, you know what I mean? But because we got hooked up with the right people, you know, the next thing, we're making a record. And it's like, you're not going to turn around and say, well, we're not going to make a record because we, you know, we shit. You know, you just got to jump on and do it, you know. So,
But you've been a bit promoted above your station already, right?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, I had to learn on the job. I mean, one of the first songs I ever wrote, I think, was about Vietnam. You know, what's that about? Right, so, you know, because obviously I'm thinking, yeah, it was on the telly when I was a kid growing up, wasn't it? The news was always on and Vietnam was always on.
You must have got good at the job of songwriting, because 20-odd years later, you got Damon Albarn going, I want you on this record, come into the studio and be part of Gorillaz.
Yeah, although that was like, you know the story of that one. You know, Damon, come do some writing, no, come write something. And at the time, I was dry. I was going through a blockage, you know, writer's block. So I had nothing. So I go in the studio and I put the cans on, and the track's playing in the background. I'm like, turn it up. And this is doing that. It's going up. And then when it got to the level where it's there, and he went, right, say that again. Going up. There. That was done.
That was it.
That was a quick number one, wasn't it?
That's amazing, Sean.
Yeah.
But also, I think a lot of people don't realise that one of your biggest hits was a cover that you reworked.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that we did that on the Duress. What it was on Elektra. Our label was Elektra in America, and it was Elektra's 25th birthday. We all got given Amiga watches.
Really?
And they said, right, what we need you to do is we want you to take a back catalogue of an old Elektra artist and do something with it. And we all, do we have to? Yeah, you've got to. So basically, they gave us a C90 cassette tape with loads of stuff on. And I think that was like either the first or second track on there, Step On. And because I didn't want to listen to all the rest of it, you know, like what was on there by the other artists, it was like, let's do that one. So we did a really rough job of it, sent it to Oakenfield while he messed about with it. But he sent it back, we did a little bit, and then that was done. That was done in about 5 minutes.
Really?
So, but we, you know, of course we didn't want to do it because it was a cover. And then the next thing, you know, it's out, and then we had to do another one because we was using that as a single because it was too good just to give away, you know, on the Happy Birthday album, Alexis. So we recorded another one and we kept that one.
Wow.
It was pretty raw what we sent to Oki. Yeah.
And now look, it's like the pension that you'll never regret.
Yeah. Although John Congers is a tight get, you know, we don't get a penny off that.
Do you not?
No, well, you know, that's mine, going up, I went, no, that's another one, you're twisting my melon, man, call the cops.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't get a penny off it, no.
No. Oh, Sean, that's devastating. Have you tried?
I think we get PPL or something.
You'll get performing rights, but you won't get songwriting.
Yeah. No. I even said to their people, I said, look, just give us 1%. No, fuck off.
Oh, you've made him a rich man.
Yeah, well.
You ever met him?
No, I'm not.
Would you like to?
Not particularly, no.
Before I let you go, Sean, looking back at your stand up and deliver, are you glad you did it? And what did you learn from it, even if you couldn't remember everything you wanted to remember?
Yeah, I learned, calm down, lad. It was for a good cause. You know, don't get overconfident again. I really thought I could sort of do it, you know what I mean? Because it was just, to me, it was just dead simple. You go on, you tell some jokes or whatever. I mean, when it all got confusing is when I had to translate what I was doing and it was then not how it was in my head. It was written on, like, you know, scripted down and I just couldn't remember it. You know, I needed a lot. It's like if I do some acting or something, I get, you know, months to spend on, you know, learning the lines.
What made you want to do it for Stand Up To Cancer? What's your pull with the charity?
Well, I mean, cancer's hit my family, you know. I mean, I've been aware of it since I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old. My granddad had it. He had bowel cancer. So, I watched him go through it. And then my nana, she had her legs off. And my granddad, he had it, so you know, it's hit quite a few in our family.
Well, it's 1 in 2 people now will be diagnosed with cancer, and that's the big problem after COVID is getting people to go and get checked out, get yourselves to a doctor, because early detection is often the greatest path to recovery, isn't it?
It's essential, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So go and get checked out, people. There's nothing to be scared of getting checked out.
No, exactly. And do you go and get all your health checks done, Sean? Are you on top of all of that?
Yeah, I have to, yeah, because I've got an underactive thyroid, so I don't even have a thyroid, right?
Jeez.
You know, so underactive, it makes you blow up.
Yeah.
And then also, when your thyroid goes, I also maybe testosterone, so I have to use testosterone replacement. And then all sorts of things, because my thyroid went, loads of other things go, because your thyroid controls a lot of stuff, yeah. You know, so, yeah.
And you've really been through it. You've got your hips. Have you had your hips replaced?
Yeah, well, one of them. I've got to have another one done.
Cool, you've got it all going on.
Yeah, and then look what happened to me. All my body hair and my head hair and all that lot fell out, and my eyebrows and all that lot.
Was that because of the thyroid?
Yeah. I'll judge you. I mean, what it was is, we had to stop my testosterone replacement for a while because my blood cells was turning some other colour. Don't know if it's white or red or whatever. These blood cells was going dolly. So we had to stop my testosterone replacement. And then literally within a week or two, then everything had gone and all that lot.
It's growing back now, then, yeah?
I mean, I just had my eyebrows done. I popped over to London the other day to get my eyebrows done. And then that's not real there. It's called a... skin pigmentation.
Right.
So that's basically, it's like a tattoo for that and my eyebrows.
So they've tattooed your eyebrows on. And is your hair growing back now, though? I thought you had a little bit of
rebirth. No, that's the same. That's what they call skin pigmentation, it's called. It's a procedure that you get done, but it's similar to a tattoo. But I had it done on my head and done it on my eyebrows.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm totally unreal. I mean, they're not real.
But you lost most of your teeth through drug abuse, didn't you?
Now, that was not a drug abuse, yeah. That, you know, yeah. Not heroin, but the other one.
Crack?
Crack and crystal meth.
Oh, Jeez, Sean. And these are, so they're all veneers now, yeah?
No, not veneers. I had veneers years ago, and then when the veneers were crap, these are all screwed in. I actually had these done in an 18-hour session, the lot.
18 hours you were under?
Yeah, it was great, you know. We had the, what do you call it, an anaesthetist. I was like, you know, he wired me up the anaesthetist and was just letting things, whoo, I don't care. Do what you want.
Well, you're wearing them well, Sean. You're wearing them well. And now that the world's slowly starting to open up again, are you back out on the road?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I say, Joanne's made up, you see, because she won't see me now for about 5 years, and she's very happy.
How's it been being locked down together?
It's been good, really. You know, it's been all right. She might give you a different answer, but I've enjoyed it because, you know, you never get to spend this much time at home, you know. And so, you know, I'm ready now for going back out there, but I have enjoyed it.
That's nice to hear. Oh, Sean, take care of yourself. Look, get that other hip in quick and smart. Otherwise, you ain't going to have much movement on stage, are you?
It's bone. I'm bone at the moment.
Oh, Sean. Look, you take it easy and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sean Ryder, what a gent, finding the time today to shout about the brilliant work of Stand Up To Cancer. And if you want to help, if you want to get involved or just donate, go and visit their website. It's standuptocancer.org.uk. And please tune in next Tuesday. We are dropping a very special bonus episode where I'm going to be catching up with Deborah James and Lauren Marn, who you'll know from their brilliant podcast, You, Me and the Big C. We spoke with the girls at the very beginning of lockdown about what life looked like for them living with cancer and the realities of what lockdown could mean for the cancer community. It's a fascinating episode. Please, if you have the time, do give it a listen. And as I've said before, we haven't touched a drop during the making of this episode today because it's a Stand Up To Cancer special and because there is a proven link to alcohol causing cancer. As always, the show is produced by me, Kate Thornton, with Richard Hatherall and Libby Knowles for Yahoo UK, and our music's provided by Andy Bell. If you like what you've heard today, then please do rate and review us, especially if you've got nice things to say. And if you want to join the conversation with us on social media, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at WhiteWineQT. I'll see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at yoquierodineropodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.